Welcome to episode 187 of Cowboy Driver Free, the podcast. My name is Joel Penfield, as always joined by Philip Slavin. Philip, before we get into our recap of the Iowa State game, I have a lovely little clip from our previous episode that I'd like to just bring back into the universe real quick, if you think that's all right.
Yes.
Okay. Without further ado.
This week, you're not going to like my score prediction. because of the gap in schedules that they've played, I think Iowa State is a far more tested team up to this point. I trust their quarterback more than I think Oklahoma State fans trust Spencer Sanders, or at least trust his health, maybe. I would say the running games are at least on par with each other, even if Iowa State is averaging a little bit more yards per play in the running game. The passing game is maybe not quite as up to par as Oklahoma State. It's probably a wash on offense, to be honest. And I think Iowa State's defense is more experienced and it's battle tested. I mean, that defense has an absurd amount of snaps laid on that thing, and they've got a really good pass rush. For that reason, I think Oklahoma State, I think it's close in the first half for sure. But my final score prediction is 37-17, Iowa State.
That was from our good friend Levi Stevenson over at Wide Right Natty Light. Before the game today, he, as he said, picked Iowa State 37-17. Oklahoma State won this game 24-21, but because we love to mess with our friends over in Ames, Iowa, just felt like we needed to bring that one back.
I love Levi. At the time of his prediction, it was kind of like, I don't see a blowout coming in that direction, but hey, man, you know, you're confident in your team. He is a bit of a homer. It happens.
A bit.
But yeah, I think the let's just say it. Rocktober is canceled.
It is absolutely done.
For the second straight season, Oklahoma State has come away from Rocktober with the W. And I think that's fair. And you can say, well, Iowa State is now 1-2 versus Oklahoma State in the month of October. Yes, as we all recall, Brock Purdy's debut for Iowa State was starting the second drive of the 2018 game. And as Jim Knowles has said, he just beat the crap out of him. You have to think that after that game, Jim Knowles and this defense, of which a lot of players are still around from that game, have carried around a certain mission of like, that's not going to happen again. And for two straight seasons, it has not. And Oklahoma State has been victorious and is the only team to beat Brock Purdy in the month of October and to meet Matt Campbell in the month of October since 2017.
Yeah, let's just start with the defense right away. I think there's more storylines and a little more to break down with the offense. But the defense was outside really of two big runs by Breece Hall, who is otherworldly good. You know, the hype surrounding him is legitimate. Mm-hmm. And the last possession of the game where Iowa State scored made it a little more interesting. And when Oklahoma State was really just in a prevent shell trying to just run the clock out with a drive that was extended by a Charlie Kolar catch, non-catch, whatever, the defense was spectacular. They really were. They absolutely shut down Iowa State from about the second possession of the third quarter on. Brock Purdy couldn't get anything going. Underneath wasn't working. He had a hard time getting the ball to Kolar. And when Kolar did catch the ball or did have the ball within range, he was dropping it. They were able to get pressure on him, get Brock Purdy off schedule. They were able to shut down Breece Hall relative to what, you know, you can do to shut down a guy like that. Overall, you can't say enough good things about the defense. They are as good as advertised. It's not just inflated numbers against Kansas. It's not inflated numbers against a bad West Virginia offense. This is a very good, legitimate defense that is going to help Oklahoma State continue to win games this season. And I think they proved that to a national audience today.
Let's hit a couple of things. First of all, let me just read you the drive chart for Iowa State in the second half. Interception, touchdown, punt, 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 touchdown that didn't matter. outside of the two touchdown drives, one was 74 yards, one was 83. Iowa State's yards per drive were 15, 27, 1, negative 5, 6, 2. 27, 1, negative 5, 6, 2. And then, of course, 83 on the touchdown drive that was given too many other chances by the refs because the refs were terrible all day on Saturday. Both sides, I'm going to be fair,
they were bad for Oklahoma they were bad State for both teams.
Times, but God, they were awful. The defense, you're not going to shut out Iowa State. You're not going to shut out Brock Purdy. You held them to 21 points. Seven of those came after an interception by Spencer Sanders in the first quarter or early in the game. Was it first quarter or second quarter?
It was early. No, it was the second possession of the game.
Yeah,
second. So it was first quarter.
Yeah. So, like, you look at this defense and go, outside of two huge plays, and one of those Breece Hall's plays led to a missed field goal. So it didn't even have an impact on the game besides yardage. So, I mean, from that standpoint, the defense played stellar. Now, as for Breece Hall, I tweeted this out, and I think it's a fair comparison. This reminded me of multiple Chuba Hubbard performances last season, especially that one against TCU that my good friend Parker Fleming of Stats of War and Frogs of War likes to bring up. It was very much he had two giant plays, one for 70 yards, one for 66. His other 18 carries were for 51 yards. So outside of two huge plays, he averaged 3.5 yards per carry and had 51 yards on 18 carries. The Oklahoma State defense stood up and really held him in check. And look, Breece Hall is one of the best running backs in the Big 12. There's a few handful. Chuba's one of them, but they did a damn good job against this team. The thing that Levi point when he's trying to make these picks that made me just confused is like your wide receivers aren't that good.
No,
like, yes, we understand you have all the tight ends.
Yeah,
and Xavier Hutchinson is good, but they shut Xavier Hutchinson down for the most part. Like they really kept him in check, and the tight ends in check for the most part. Like it was really an impressive performance by the secondary.
Absolutely,
the defense as a whole, but the secondary was so good and continues to be so good.
They really did a great job of containing Charlie Kohler. He made one ridiculous play. Well, the one ridiculous catch was a clear push off on it was on Amen or it was on a linebacker, somebody. Either way, he completely shoved the dude out of the way. Should have been OPI and he made the catch, whatever. But for the most part, they were able to contain him. And when they were able to find Atkinson, it was underneath stuff that the flowing linebackers were able to get to. There really didn't allow a huge play at all when it comes to deep balls down the field. And for a defense to be able to do that, especially in the Big 12, when Brock Purdy has the ability to make some of these plays and they weren't able to do it. I was incredibly impressed by the secondary today. Rodarius Williams showed a couple of plays were made on him for like the first time all season. He actually got tested on the outside. But Colby Harvell-Peel and Trey Sterling are proving to be probably the best safety duo in the conference, and if not one of the best in the country. They were fantastic today against the run and the pass. Colby Harvell-Peel made that fantastic play on, I think it was a 3rd and 1, to stop Breece Hall on first contact, which is really tough to do. His Breece Hall's ability to break that first tackle is he's one of the best in the conference at that. And then Sterling, the play that sticks out of my mind is it was a play on Kolar where he jumped the route and knocked the ball away on the 3rd and 15 to force another Iowa State punt. That was one of the best defensive plays I've seen from that team or from any player on the team all season.
That was their second to last drive. It was the one before the touchdown drive. And it was beautiful. Like it was a perfect defensive play. Absolutely perfect. Like you can't. I think we can start saying, for those who want to be like, well, they haven't played anybody, that was fair. It's a fair argument. And I talked about the fact that, on my last pod, if you go back to last year and carry that over because so much is left over roster-wise, this is good defense. We've heard the argument against Oklahoma State being they hadn't played anybody. We played Iowa State, and everybody's really high on Iowa State. Their offense is good. It's not the best offense in the country in any way, shape, or form. And I think sometimes the Brock Purdy is good, but I think sometimes the Brock Purdy stuff is a little overstated. But I think the defense is – don't come after this game and hear people going, well, but they still haven't played. Nope. This was a game I think a fair, at least probably around half of the people were picking Iowa State to win this of all the podcasts and things that I was listening to. Oklahoma State, and you can say it's a three-point win. This didn't feel like a three-point win. This was a game where Iowa State got a score late that made the game closer score-wise than it felt. Exactly. Because, and you and I texted about this. There was a point in the second half where it was 21-14, and I just said, if Oklahoma State can get up a second touchdown, this game feels over. This is a game that I don't know how Big Ten and SEC fans have watched this kind of stuff for the past like decade plus. I don't understand it because it's not fun. But this is a game where you just, if you went up two scores, it was over. I mean, that's what happened. Even with the field goal, you're up two scores. The game was over the way the defense is playing. So, look, full credit to him. Here's a fun stat. Max Olson tweeted this out. The Cowboy football defense is legit. Gave up two big runs to Breece Hall, as we mentioned, the 70-yarder and the 66-yarder. Gave up 3.9 yards per play the rest of the game. Forget the fact that you held Breece Hall in check the rest of the time. 3.9 yards per play other than two giant plays.
Yeah, so just looking Brock, and this should tell us a little bit of a story about Brock Purdy too, just taking everything he could underneath. He was 19-34 for 162 yards only, average less than 5 yards per attempt. It was 4.8 per reception or whatever, but less than 5 yards of completion on the Oklahoma State defense. I mean, that's a huge credit to them. And really, I mean, if you look, Charlie Kohler is his number one target. No doubt about that. You could tell.
Oh, everyone knows
it. And you could tell that Purdy was uncomfortable trying to throw to anyone else. Hutchinson had 100, had eight catches, but a lot of those, it was just underneath checkdowns because Kohler was taken away. And two of those catches to Kohler shouldn't have probably happened, if we're being totally honest, because he did not have control of the ball inside, and it should have been OPI on the other one. So he should really have three catches for what, maybe 15, 16 yards?
Sure.
Something like that. Either way, they were able to take away Brock Purdy. And Iowa State really got away from the run game when they were down by two scores, because they knew how desperate they needed to be to score. They started trying to throw the ball, and Oklahoma State started bringing the pressure. Credit to Jim Knowles for dialing up some perfect blitzes and opportunities for Trace Ford, McAlvin Bundage, Malcolm Rodriguez to get free and get some pressure in Purdy's face. I talked about that before the game, being able to get Purdy off schedule and out of structure. And they were able to do that multiple times in this game. And that made a lot of the difference.
You know, I think there's something when Jim Knowles got Stillwater, one of the things that was talked about with that defense was it was kind of like, you're going to give up some big plays here and there. But the idea is to give him a play, get the ball back to your offense, it's fine, and force three and outs, right? I know they changed the defensive scheme last year after the Baylor game ahead of the Iowa State game. But I think this year is the perfect example of you're going to give up big plays. Tulsa's touchdown came on a big play. West Virginia's touchdown came on a big play. Kansas didn't have a big play. Kansas sucks. Iowa State had two big plays. One cost you 7 points. One didn't cost you anything. This defense is going to give up some big plays. It's going to happen. The big touchdown by Breece Hall was, if you watched it, Brock Purdy read the defense perfectly. The defense, the plan on defense was flawed, and Iowa State took advantage. It was a bad call. It was a bad defensive call. It wasn't a player's fault. It was a bad defensive call. Brock Purdy read it perfectly. Breece Hall went in for the touchdown. They're going to happen. But that's the thing about this team. Like, okay, you've given up four big plays in four games total. The defense the rest of the time is going to be good. So it's frustrating to watch Breece Hall run some 66-yard touchdown or get a 70-yard carry. By the way, the fact that they chased him down on that first one to prevent a touchdown and eventually lead to a missed field goal, I don't think we're going to give that tackle enough of a credit because it led to a 70-yard run, but it was a 70-yard run that led to 0 points. It meant, at the end of the game, it meant nothing other than yards to put up to boost his stats. They chased him down. They got the tackle, prevented the touchdown, and it led to 0 points. That, to me, looking back, if you look at moments in the game that are big, there's great plays. The Trace Sterling play was big. There's a lot of big plays on defense. There were. Trace Ford batting down multiple passes of Brock Purdy. He's going to do that, but he's going to grab the ball and run into the end zone with it. I just, by the time, and I don't mean this season, but I mean by the end of his career, Trace Ford is going to bat a pass, catch it, and run it in. It's going to happen.
I want to go. I'm going to talk about Bryce Miller for a second.
I think the play of the game that we have to really, to me, is chasing down Breece Hall on that big run, preventing the touchdown, it leading to 0 points. I think that is absolutely the defensive play of the game. Looking back over the whole game and the impact the plays had, that play was huge. It's why you never give up on the play.
And it was I want to go back and watch the game at some point, but I believe it was the backside corner coming all the way across the field to make that tackle. I need to go back and watch the play, but I believe if I remember right, that's what it was. I can't remember who it was. And also I'd have to go back and watch to be sure to give full credit, but I think that's what it was. But I do want to talk about Trace Ford for a second, because you and I are, you've been incredibly high on him since last season, before the season even started. And this is another one. This is one of those things where the box score can lie to you a little bit. Do you know off the top of your head how many tackles he had in this game?
Not a lot.
He had two. He had two tackles, both solo. One of those was for a sack, which, you know, tackle for a loss, and then two pass breakups. Didn't it feel like he was in on damn near every play in the backfield, or at least forcing something? It felt if nothing else, even if you didn't make the play, he impacted the play more often than not.
He had half of OSU's passes defended.
Yep. And the little like dip move that he did around the right tackle, for the easy sack, just made it look so effortless. He's going to get bullied by some bigger tackles and bigger, stronger tackles at times, just because he is a little bit of an undersized edge. But his athleticism and his agility, it's going to lead to him getting to the ball, or at least impacting the play more often than not. I tweeted it after, I think it was the second pass breakup. But I firmly believe that before he leaves, which will probably be next year, that he's going to be the Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year. He is that good. Whenever his time is, by the time his career in Stillwater is over, he will have a Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year. He is that talented and plays with enough intensity and gets the stats enough to back that up.
Yeah. No, look, when you are on Twitter and seeing people who don't cover Oklahoma State or Iowa State, like Keegan now going, Trace Ford is going to be a problem. Like, Trace Ford is a problem for teams. Like, you have to account for him. Even if he doesn't produce in the stat line, you watch him. He impacts every play with the way he plays. So he may not always get home, but not getting home every time doesn't mean that you aren't having a massive impact on how the game is played. And he has a massive impact at all times.
Well, and if you look at the little mini preview that they did on College Game Day this morning, Desmond Howard talked about the defense is led by Trace Ford. Not Malcolm Rodriguez, not Amen Agbonvamiga, not Trey Sterling, not Colby Harbaugh-Peel, and who are all uber-talented in their own right. Trace Ford was the dude that got brought up as a sophomore on a senior-laden defense. I think that says a lot about what not just the local media that may or may not cover Oklahoma State, but the national media is starting to recognize how talented this guy is and the impact that he's having on the Oklahoma State defense as a sophomore.
Did it feel like there was a penalty on every kick?
There was. There 100% was.
Every kickoff, every punt, every extra point,
okay.
That was not now, a – can we be honest? I know we won.
It was an ugly game. It was a disgusting game.
That is a Big Ten SEC game from 5 years ago. It was not a plus. I don't know how people watch that and enjoy it. Like, I don't know how – like, we had one Big 12 game today. It was between West Virginia and Texas Tech. That was not a Big 12 game. 24-21 where you're just sweating it out, watching the defense stop everything. I'm not comfortable enough, just sitting back being like, no, we're fine. The defense has got this. Like, I'm just sitting like, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God. Like, it's crazy. But man, can we win a shootout at some point? I think I would be more comfortable with a 41-38 win at some point this season. Like, I'd be like, okay, this is, I'm used to this. This I'm familiar with. This I'm okay. I can do this. Like, that's not a shot at the defense, but like, oh my God.
No, you're absolutely right. It's so weird being on the other side of it now. And when your defense is winning you games, like we're just not used to. Oklahoma State's had some good defenses here and there.
Not like this.
Not like this. The offense has always been the calling card for Oklahoma State football, where right now the defense is taking its, you know, they're doing the damn thing is what they're doing. But I want to talk about special teams for a second. You brought it up briefly, how ugly it was, but special teams won Oklahoma State this game, namely Tom Hutton. I know people wanted to shit on him all of last season because they were like, oh, this dude sucks. He's awful. You don't know a damn thing about punting. That's why you don't want to talk. That's why you just want to shit on him for no reason. And also, you know he was going to come and have a good game today because his team, the Richmond Tigers, won the AFL Grand Final this morning. So you knew that he was amped up a little bit. But the play of the game, and Gundy talked about it in the postgame, the play of the game was him pinning a ball inside the 5-yard line and Brendan Presley, who was a gunner, going down and essentially making the catch and downing that ball inside the 5-yard line, eventually leading to an Iowa State 3-and-out, which turned the tide in the game. It just continued that stretch where the defense was doing well enough to keep them, you know, keep Oklahoma State in the game. But being able to pin Iowa State back that far, Oklahoma State was able to pin their ears back on the defensive line, bring a little bit of pressure, and force Iowa State to throw the ball. That was the play of the game right there. Now, an Alex Hale missed field goal. Oh, my God, he's human. He actually missed one. But on the other side, I mean, Connor Asali missed 2 field goals today. That's the difference in the ball game right there. It's weird that
– including the always twang. You're just like, oh, the twang of defeat. It is now, such a terrible sound to hear.
Did you see the quadruple doink in the Rice game? Rice Middle Tennessee State game?
I did see the, like, 78-yard punt in the Texas Tech game that was basically end zone to end zone, which was utterly ridiculous.
Yeah, it was like, I think it was 67-yard net or something like that. But yeah, in the Rice Middle Tennessee State game, it was an overtime, and Rice, horrible clock management. Oh my God, I'm so used to seeing that. Took 3 kneel downs and then punt and then kicked a 54-yard field goal that bounced off the upright 4 times before missing.
To kick a 54-yard, you took kneel downs to kick a.
That's what I heard. Yeah. Not great.
Well, they deserve to lose that game.
You know, and we get pissed when Mike Gundy decides to just pack it in at the end of a half. I can't imagine how infuriating that would be.
Eesh.
Do you have any more thoughts on defense, special teams, anything like that?
Tom Hutton is awesome. Alex Hale is a true freshman. Is that right?
Redshirt freshman or sophomore?
Sophomore. Yeah. Point is, he's young. Yeah. Our Aussies are still pretty good. So, yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about the offense. We have a lot to unpack there. On the other side of this break, we will be right back. All right, Philip. I think we got some storylines to talk about on the offensive side of the ball. It was at times you could see the offense really click. I think the clear thing that I want to talk about first, I mean, let's just address the quarterback. Spencer Sanders, first game back since the second series of the Tulsa game. And you can see why and how the offense is different and better with Spencer Sanders in the game because of his threat and ability to run the ball. It opens things up for Chuba Hubbard. But, my God, the Spencer Sanders experience is what's going to cause me liver failure by the end of this season.
I think at this point, and I get it, he started one full season. He started one game this season. There are some stats that are unkind to Spencer Sanders. In Big 12 games, he's got 10 touchdowns and 12 interceptions. That ain't great. I think it's all passing, though. That's shout out to Cade McFarland for that one. Make sure he gets credit because that wasn't my stat. Spencer Sanders does miraculous things. The throw on the run, and I forget at what point in the game it was. And I had no idea how it turned into anything. It was very Brock Purdy-esque.
It was a early snap by Tyrese Williams. It was right after Rice Schneider went out, and he made the throw across his body to believe it was Logan Carter for a first down. On like a 3rd and 10.
It was very Brock. It's the same crap Brock Purdy gets away with. That's how they got the touchdown there after the play took forever to bring the game within 3 and then couldn't recover the onside kick. Like Brock Purdy makes crap like that. Spencer Sanders does some amazing things unscripted that everyone can't make. Yeah. Spencer Sanders' mobility is a problem for other teams, and when they use it, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in just a second, it's a difficult thing to deal with. Now, he needs to run upfield more instead of going to the sideline because he, yep, instead of – that leads to the problem I have with Spencer Sanders. And I think at this point we're just going to have to accept that that's how he is. It feels like he still wants to go for the home run even when it's not there.
Yes.
That's the two interceptions were bad decisions by him.
And those are and perfect the, examples of
the
that.
The run plays where he runs to the sideline instead of just turning and going upfield is you gained 3 yards going all the way to the sideline because you were hoping to get a huge beat somebody and make a huge play as opposed to just turning upfield when the opportunity was there and gaining 8 yards.
Mm-hmm.
Take the 8 yards. He still struggles with take what they give you and then play the next down. Sometimes he wants to go for the home run. And maybe this isn't true, but man, that's sure how it feels. Like he wants to hit the home run. He wants the 40-yard play. He wants that big play, the big yeah play. When, dude, take 8 yards. Take eight. Because you know what eight is? Eight is that means the next down is a whole hell of a lot easier.
Yeah.
Just take it. Take what is given to you more often. He's doing a better job. He is. And it's one game. I get it. We'll see how he continues to develop through the rest of the season. But that's still his deal. He's better about it, but that's still his deal. It's like anything else. It's like any gunslinger. It's like, you know, Levi was talking about Brock Purdy or Brett Favre or whatever you want to use as a comparison. Sometimes you kind of have to live with the errors and the mistakes and accept that those are part of the package, but the upside is greater than the downside as they continue to develop. And if that is what we see from Spencer, if he continues to develop to the point that the negatives still happen but are fewer and far between, then it's fine and it's worth it and it's okay. Interceptions don't always kill you. They're frustrating, but they're not the worst thing in the world. I think we overstate the negative side of them a little bit too often. But he's got to learn, and that running thing is a big deal. He's got to learn, just turn up field, get 8 yards and be done with it and be happy and go on to the next play. Stop wasting your energy running to the sideline to gain 3 yards instead.
So I came up with a comp when we were in the middle of this game, because previous to the Oklahoma State game starting, I was watching the Auburn game, and I realized – Bo Nix and Spencer Sanders are really not that different. Now, because the way I look at it, here's the thing, I make fun of Bo Nix all the time because I have a bunch of Auburn friends, and so I just like making fun of them because, like, Bo Nix, everyone, he was supposed to be the savior last year, and he's really ungood at football for the most part. But Spencer Sanders at this point is Bo Nix with a better arm. They both are ridiculously athletic, ridiculously talented, can make about any throw on the field and have about a 5 cent head half the time trying to make stupid plays or trying to make the big play rather than the right play. We saw that a couple times today where we saw, I mean, you see just the flashes. We saw it last year too with Spencer before he got hurt. You know, we see the flashes of these ridiculous throws and these, you know, making defenders miss in the open field and all this stuff. And you see the talent. It's like, holy crap, this is why this dude is a starter. And then you see about the same amount of plays per game of just what are they doing? Throwing the ball into ridiculous coverage, trying to make a play when it's not there, fumbling the ball like crazy. They're the same player, but that's just where we're at right now. Now, do I want Spencer Sanders to be Bo Nix? No, because Bo Nix sucks. I want Spencer Sanders to be really talented, like to show what he really is. But right now, that's who he is, at least in my unprofessional opinion. Now, I will say this to Spencer's credit, and this tells me more about Spencer than anything else. He throws the interception on the second drive of the game, trying to do too much.
Yep.
But turns right around, 5-play touchdown, and had the confidence to throw the ball over the middle of the field to Jelani Woods for a touchdown. Comes out after the interception from Brock Purdy, makes a couple of good throws down the field, kind of on a heater. You know, it was just like a it's like a point, like a 3-point shooter that, you know, just pulls up from 30 feet because they've made 3 or 4 threes in a row and they brick it. It was the same thing. He made a couple of really good throws and tried to fit a ball in the double coverage when it wasn't there and threw the pick. Iowa State scores. They need a big possession from a 4-play touchdown. Had a big run, big throw to Tylan Wallace, and then got in for the rushing touchdown. That tells me more about the makeup of Spencer Sanders than anything else, because he's not fazed by the turnover. He's frustrated, but he's going to turn right around and make another play. He's got that mentality of just, let's get to the next play, let's go. And that gives me hope for his development, that he's going to continue to try and minimize those mistakes and make the right play.
Yeah, there was a third down or something. It was an incomplete pass. I think he was supposed to be going for Tylan.
It was just the overthrow. Was wrong. It was an overthrow. It's
massive. But he came off the field, and you watched him. He's just like, it's fine. It's fine. Like, he seems to bounce back from things pretty quick, which is big. And I'm happy to see it. That's important. It is. Like, it's important to be able to bounce back from stuff quickly. So I think that's important. We're going to continue to watch him develop. Again, one game this season. He's played one game and one drive and one snap.
You know, and that's why I'm not – like, I was watching a couple of those throws. I mean, obviously, when you're in the game or you're – you know, when you're watching the game live and there's mistakes like that, you know, you're pissed, obviously, as a fan. You know, it's ridiculous, you know. And for people like, you know, like us that cover the game, it's like, crap, I have to talk about this awful play, blah, blah, blah. So, in game, I'm usually not the most rational person. Give me 2 or 3 hours after the game and I kind of come down to earth a little bit, which is why we're recording this late on Saturday night and not immediately after the game. You know, Sanders, like I said, he played one drive and one play and then goes out, doesn't play for the next 2 games against West Virginia and Kansas, then has 2 weeks off in what should have been a fairly, you know, warm-up game against Baylor, who's not very good. You know, you think you'd be able to kind of ease him in. Then he's got to go and play Iowa State, who has a pretty solid defense, right off the rip in his first conference game. That's not a very good situation to come into, especially coming off back-to-back bye weeks. He was not necessarily put into a position to succeed coming back from injury. So that's why I'm not as upset now as I was in game. I think at the end of the day, if he can improve week to week, you got Texas next week. You know, that was his first game on national TV, really, against Texas last year, and he showed flashes of what he could be. And now you get this game at home on Halloween, you get another nationally televised game. And let's see what he's got. It's going to be a big test for him to see if he can bounce back and minimize those turnovers and make more of those plays that, you know, shows us, you know, who he really is as a quarterback.
Yeah. Can we also talk about Tylan Wallace just going and shoving the Iowa State corner?
That was my favorite play of the game.
jaw. And I
– Tylan doesn't – Tylan – Tylan wants all the smoke. He doesn't care. He will go, and that's the one thing. Like, you can see all of the miraculous catches and, you know, the crazy stuff.
Hops. The catch where he leaped about,
I don't know, 4 feet in the air.
30 yeah. feet in the air? Is that a fair?
Yeah. Yeah. But his, like, he doesn't give a damn. He's going to go and ear hole somebody on a block on a run play, even if the play is not anywhere near him. And I love that. And, you know, Casey Dunn loves that too.
It's a big win. It's a huge win. I don't think you can overstate how important this win was. It's the first of three huge games. Really, it's first of four huge games in a row. Mm-hmm. To get this one, I think is big for momentum. I think a lot of things were stacked against Oklahoma State because of all the time off they had to have. To get this, I know I picked Iowa State to win. I did. I'm always happy to be wrong when I pick against Oklahoma State, okay? I'm happy to be like, I was wrong. I don't know how to put on my Iowa State shirt. I can sleep my OSU gear on.
Yes, yeah, and shirt. I think, yeah, like I, you know, I'm a very cynical SOB on this what? Podcast, on Twitter, everything else.
What?
But I hope that people understand that I want to be wrong when I say stupid shit about Oklahoma State. Like, whenever I'm pissed off and I say how terrible we are, I don't want Oklahoma State to be terrible. But it's just yeah, how
we would like us moment. To just make homer picks every week.
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
It's not very good. So I
do want to make one more point about the offense. I thought the offensive line played really well today. They didn't give up a sack. You know, Iowa State's defense is pretty good. Their pass rushers are.
They have a good defensive line.
Yes. And so I think this kind of gives a little bit of credit. A ton of credit obviously goes to Charlie Dickey for finding the right mix after all the shuffling they had to do the first couple of weeks. I think they found a set that works, and now they're starting to play even better. That was the one thing I think I mentioned on the last podcast, that even though Oklahoma State didn't play the last 2 weeks, and as much as that sucks, it at least gave the offense a little bit of time and a little bit of continuity to continue to get that offensive line better together. And that obviously paid off a little bit this week. And they're going to continue to get better too. As things roll on, if they can stay healthy, Ry Schneider went down for a little bit. He came back in the game. Injury not as serious as initially thought. So they played really well against a good defense. I think the narrative that Oklahoma State's offensive line is garbage is at least put to rest for a bit. We'll see what we got against Texas next week.
A couple of things we got to shout out here. Congrats to the Cowgirls soccer team beating Texas 2-0 on Friday night. They're pretty much out of the running for the Big 12 title. West Virginia 6-1, TCU's 5-0-1. OSU's got two matches left. They play Texas Tech this coming week, and then they basically have 2 weeks off before the rescheduled Bedlam match. They need a lot of things to happen. They'd have to win out, go 6-2-1, and hope other teams. But congrats to them on the win. We got two very winnable matches left. Texas Tech at home at Oklahoma. Texas Tech's 1-3-2. OU's 0-4-1. OU's bad. So that's big. This Friday coming up. Also, the Cowboy golf team finished their fall schedule with a win at the Merido Collegiate Invitational. They got the win there. Austin Eckroat finished runner-up individually. So congrats to the men's golf team and congrats to the Cowgirls. Some big stuff. I know that the softball team's been doing some scrimmaging. We also have to talk about we got a little hoops scheduling news we didn't get to on our previous episode because we had way too much to talk about.
And Levi wouldn't stop talking.
Can I just say, and I know I saw the people like irritated that we're playing Arkansas in the SEC Challenge again. Yes, this will be the third time we play Arkansas. We played South Carolina three times. We've also played A&M and Auburn. I get it. It seems repetitive, and it would be fun because of the challenge to play a Florida or a team like that. I'm of the opinion Oklahoma State and Arkansas should be playing on a regular basis in men's basketball anyways. Like, it doesn't have to be every year. That's fine. But if you told me they had two home and homes a decade, they played 30 times. The two teams have played 30 times. That's it. That's too few for two schools separated by 3.5-hour drive. Like, just – or 2.5. I think it's 3.5. I forget. Point of the matter is this. It's a good game at home. I love it. As someone who lives in Arkansas, has relatives who are diehard Arkansas fans, like, it's fun. Like, give me OSU in Arkansas on a regular basis. There's no reason these two teams shouldn't be playing home and homes on the reg. They just should. It makes a lot of sense. And after, if the coronavirus has taught us nothing, if you want to save money, schedule closer to home. Schedule things that make sense and are easy. There's no reason to be scheduled. Like, I get it. It's fun to play Virginia Tech. It's fun to play Gonzaga. I'm fine with that stuff. I'm fine if you want to have one of those every year. You're going to be playing a Big East team every year at home or away. That's great. But the rest of the schedule, just put Arkansas on there. Wichita State's great. Creighton. Pick teams that are nearby that you can have rivalries with. Because here's the other thing with Arkansas. It's really easy for Oklahoma State fans to go to Fayetteville and watch the game. It's really easy for Arkansas fans to come to Stillwater and watch the game. That's a full arena. That's a loud crowd. That's a fun time. So I am pumped for Arkansas coming. That is a game I have now circled as the – I'm going to get to one basketball game this year because, God, by God, I'm going to watch Cade Cunningham live at least one friggin' time. That game is circled on my calendar as a, January 30th. I think I can probably swing that one. And if I can, I'm gonna.
Yeah. And like I said, there's enough good basketball in the Midwest around, at least within three or four states that you can get scheduled some really good non-conference games here. And Arkansas is one of them. And I think it's really cool that they're going to play this year because of the impact that Eddie Sutton had on that program and on Oklahoma State. They're going to be able to honor him together. That's going to be really cool. I've seen people talk about doing like Arkansas wears Eddie era throwbacks and Oklahoma State wears 90s Eddie era throwbacks.
Please.
That. But I think that would be a great time for the two programs to come together and really honor the guy that really helped vault their programs during the time that he was there. So that is a cool little subplot to Arkansas-Oklahoma State, which is going to be a really good game.
I can't imagine they don't. The way Oklahoma State taught, you know, and Boynton as well have really, you know, the relationship that we have with the family now, I can't imagine OSU doesn't set something up as a honor to Eddie with both those teams that he coached and led to Final Fours in Stillwater playing each other on January 30th. I don't see how they don't. I would love if the teams worked to wear Eddie throwbacks for both squads. Like, that would be the coolest thing in a matchup that I think Arkansas is going to be pretty good this year. Like, in a, what are they, a 12-team conference, 14 teams?
14.
I think they finish in the top half. That's it. They're going to finish in the top half. I think they finish in the top five in the SEC. I think they're pretty good. I think Musselman's a good coach. He's recruiting well. I think it's a solid squad. That could very well be a ranked-on-ranked matchup in Stillwater for that Big 12 SEC Challenge. I think it's one of the better SEC Big 12 Challenge matchups. I know people don't – like, it's Arkansas. I get it. We've played them twice before. I think it's a big deal. I think that's one of the ones that are going to be one of the marquee games that they circle on there, aside from the Baylor game and the Kansas game and the, you know, the West Virginia game. I think that's one of the better ones. I'm excited for it. And if they do an Eddie honor at all, like, that's going to get televised and people are going to talk about it. I think it's a big thing. I love it. I'm excited for it. Because look, now our schedule has whoever they play in Lincoln. And obviously we don't know who all is going to be in there. So there's no dates or teams set for that, but it is on November 25th. That's literally like a month away. We're recording this on October 24th. The 25th of November is the first game of the season, folks. I'm so excited. So we have those three games, a road game at Marquette, a game against Oakland, a home game that is TBD, a road game at Wichita State, and a home game against Arkansas. This is a nice schedule coming together. This really is. I'm obviously, you know, if they get three crappy games in Lincoln and another bye game in Stillwater, it'll be less so. I doubt that's what's going to happen. You don't have Cade Cunningham and schedule garbage. I'm really intrigued for how this schedule finishes out, but I really like how it's come together so far.
Yeah, and if nothing else, man, we're about a month away from watching Cade Cunningham in a real-life basketball game for Oklahoma State, and I cannot tell you how excited I am for just that fact, right? We're going to get one season of them. I want to maximize my enjoyment of watching number two play for Oklahoma State.
So, to wrap up on football, the Big 12 standings at this point, Oklahoma State sits atop them. I mean, technically, them and Kansas State. Kansas State's 4-0 in conference play, but 4-1 overall. Oklahoma State is 4-0 overall, 3-1 in conference play. Everyone else has a loss, just like we drew it up. Iowa State with a loss.
Oklahoma with two losses.
West Virginia with – oh, yeah, West Virginia has two losses now. So we have Kansas State, Oklahoma State, Iowa State, still in division. Oklahoma's not out of it, folks. They're not.
They're not.
You think Oklahoma's not going to get to Arlington, you're out of your mind. Texas still with two losses. West Virginia's got two. Look, Baylor's got two. Texas Tech, TCU, Kansas have three. Let's just say it. There are five teams in contention. Kansas State, Oklahoma State, Iowa State, Oklahoma, and Texas. I know Texas. I get it. OSU plays Texas this week. How fun would it be, forget the fact of winning, completely knock Texas out of Big 12 title running and literally light Tom Herman's seat on fire? I don't think he's going to get fired. I don't think he should. It's going to cost too much. And it's a weird year. This is not a year you come and go, you suck. Like, yeah, well, it's hard to win this year. Rutgers beat Michigan State, okay?
What a time.
Indiana scored a two-point conversion to beat
Penn State.
Penn State, okay? Purdue came back and beat Iowa. Like, I don't want to talk about Big Ten. But the point is, Iowa State lost to Louisiana. Kansas State lost. Let this year be. But it would be really fun to, after next week, to be like, well, Texas is officially out of the running, and we're down to four teams, and we'll continue to see how that goes. Yeah. Just be prepared for Oklahoma State versus Iowa State or Oklahoma. Like, I'm not saying we're going to get there because we still have Texas, road game at Kansas State, a road game at Oklahoma. There's too many games left on the schedule.
Yeah. But
this win was huge. I think next week is big with Texas because it could knock Texas out. It's obviously you don't want to start for a loss right now. I think the road game at Kansas State in 2 weeks is a bigger game, obviously, because Kansas State gets West – are they going to West Virginia, I think?
I can't
remember. Kansas State. So Kansas State goes to West Virginia next week. I haven't decided how I feel about that game yet.
I never feel good going to Manhattan. Kansas
State could be.
I never do.
5-0 in conference, but I know. But it's, yeah. True freshman quarterback, man.
Yeah.
Like, you barely beat TCU. They're not great. Congratulations on curb stomping Kansas.
Everybody does that.
Like, let me see how he looks against West Virginia's defense. We'll have a conversation about it.
Yeah, we'll see. Don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. Big game against Texas in Boone Pickens Stadium on Saturday, and we will have the preview for that for you later this week. I don't know who our guest is going to be. I'm sure Philip will get someone great lined up. We'll figure that out. We'll figure that out in the next couple of days. Philip, where can everyone follow you on Twitter?
You can follow me personally at OKTXARPoke. Of course, it's me. You can follow my show, the 1012 podcast, T and the number 12, the word podcast, available anywhere podcasts can be found. And we can also follow us on Twitter at 1012 podcast. You can follow us on Instagram at 1012 pod. We will have our recap episode of the weekend up on Monday. I am very excited to talk about the fact that Baylor punted from the Texas 30 in the first quarter.
Dave Aranda needs to be fired for that.
Yeah, I don't. You were at the Texas 30. I don't care if it was 4-12. You're at the 30-yard line, and you punted. What?
I think anytime you punt in plus territory should be illegal. If we're being totally honest with ourselves,
it's the 30-yard line. Do you not have a field goal kicker? You don't even try the field goal. You punt the ball from their 30.
Oh, Baylor.
Mike Gundy's not that conservative.
Don't tempt Mike Gundy with a good time. You follow me at JT Penfield. Be sure to follow the main site at Cowboys RFF, and we will be back midweek. Preview the Texas game. We'll talk to you all then.